Hello everyone, it's Chris Hall here from Charity Digital, the organisation that helps other charities be more digital. Today, we have a special podcast for you. In March, we had over 400 charity professionals join us at Olympia London for a day of learning, knowledge sharing and connecting. We managed to record all of the 22 sessions from the day, and we'll be releasing them as bonus podcasts throughout the series to help share some of the amazing conversations we were having on the day. If you want to keep up to date with all our upcoming podcasts and events, like and subscribe the podcast through your usual podcast provider and sign up for Charity Digital updates at charitydigital.org.uk. Enjoy the pod.
Right, hello and welcome to, it's not the last session of the conference, but it's the last of our breakout sessions. If you thought you were coming to how to become a more digitally diverse organisation, you are in the right place. There's just been a change of title. And the reason for change of title is this session's going to be really focused not just on the how, but on actually what the benefits of that are as well. And I'm delighted to introduce our two speakers. We have Jason Kaplan, who is the outgoing digital director at Barnardo's, about to join Snook. But I believe that most of the content is actually going to be delivered by Mira. Mira Naik, have I got that right? Good. Head of Data Transformation. So they'll have about 25 minutes of content, and then there'll be an opportunity for Q&A as well. But I'd like to hand over, without further ado now, to our main speakers. Thank you.
Hello, thank you very much indeed, that was very kind. I'm Jason, I'm full disclosure, I have actually left Barnardo's, I'm no longer their Director of Digital Transformation, and leaving the keys to Mira and various other wonderful, wonderful people to make that happen. But I'm here because I think people like me should get off the stage a lot more, so I'm going to do that in a couple of minutes, because there is a problem in digital and tech circles. That we, in the charity sector, I think we talk about much more bravely than in certainly the private sector or in bits of government. And that is that the teams that we work in and the people that we work for tend to look a lot more like me than they do most of the other people in this room and, in fact, on this slide. So this is our digital team at Barnardo's. And I'm mostly here to shout about three things. One, all digital teams should look and be and feel and be proud of being as diverse as possible. We are the future, we are creating the future, we are being the future for our users. We're their kind of lightning rod for change in the organizations that we work in at the moment. And if your team doesn't look like this, then you're not representing the people that you're creating, all the wonderful things that you're creating for. So go and shout at your boss and make sure that they do better. It's really, really easy to hire brilliant technical people from all backgrounds and with all sorts of experiences to bring to the table. It's not hard to work out how to create a good pipeline and to advertise in places that are different from the places that traditionally we've advertised in for jobs. It's not hard to go out to university campuses and, you know, have a Mencap stall or a Samaritan stall or a Barnardo stall and say, hey, we're hiring for coders and see who comes along. Or even not a university stall, but an apprenticeships program or a college or a, you know, when T-levels come in later on in this year, you've kind of got your target audience sitting there ready, waiting for you to give them jobs. So the fewer people that look, I just waved at the wrong possible moment. I'm going to do that again without waving. The fewer people like me that are on stages at this conference in a year's time, the better. I'm really proud that Charity Digital managed to get a 50% female representation on their panels today, which is really good. There should be no programs conferences that ever happen that aren't like that. So basically, I'm finished with my rant now. So that's it. Build teams like this. It gets you better outcomes. Mira's going to talk about why in a minute. I'm just going to talk about something that I think is really, really interesting for us in the room and certainly from the conversations that I've had with other people today. And that's that things, this is an advert for us, sorry. Everything that Barnardo's does is in the open. Please steal it. Please reuse it. If you want to use bits of it and you can't work out how it's got done, talk to Mira and she'll point you in the right direction of all the team members. Future.barnardo's.org.uk is our little kind of microsite of everything that we're doing. And if you want to learn really, really how it's into the weeds of what we're doing, look at blog.barnardo's.org.uk .barnard.do. I'll put that up at the end. We're really proud of our little .do domain name. Barnard, don't you see how we did that? It's clever. And we talk about everything there. So we think that that's another important thing that you know that we do too. So things that we learned in the last year, we were just talking to DataKind outside about the fact that a year ago, most organizations were like, oh my God, a digital team, brilliant, can you make us a website? And hopefully, none of us work in organizations now where people think that's what digital is. Most organizations like this, never use emojis in your PowerPoint presentations. They come out weird on the screen. That's a lemon. So this is an example of a lemon organization would be one that said this. Quite a lot, that's a third place medal. I'm having to like visually describe my own slides. This is embarrassing. So most organizations now have kind of worked out that a data is a good thing and we should get one of those. So if you're working in an organization like that, yay, that's a good start. Some organizations have started to ask questions like, oh, why do we need this stuff? It's not just about shiny and lipstick on pigs and all those sorts of things. We should start thinking about this sort of stuff. If you're working in an organization like that, that's great. Be proud of your organization and yourselves for having pushed them on that journey. Very few organizations, and I can confidently count Barnardo's as one of these, but there are few of us out there, and I think it's our responsibility to help the rest of you. That sounds massively arrogant, I'm sorry. The rest of the sector do get to this stage, which is like, if you can get your CEO and your trustees and your board to be like, oh my goodness, digital's not a thing. It's just like, that's how we work nowadays. Children in our sector, children assume that the world will be always on and instant and in their pocket and preferably at a minimal data cost for their pay-as-you-go package. Everyone assumes that Wi-Fi will just work unless you're on a train. We live in a world where digital should be like obviously the default. So if you're in any of the lemon third, second place categories and you haven't got a first place, this is really embarrassing, first place category organization, it's going to look terrible on the Twitter, then push your organization to do that. We've done this at Barnardo's by creating a team of 150 people at the heart of the organization who have responsibility for making culture change, not really focusing on putting out shiny products or delivering a website, although we've done those along the way, and that's an important thing to do. Delivery is important. But mostly what we've done is we've tried to create as much of a paradigm, that's a terrible word, but a kind of like a bubble inside the organization of people who have brilliant skills and who aren't afraid to use them, and who, more importantly, aren't afraid to call on other people in the team to help do more than they could do themselves. And that, for me, is where the diversity, especially of background, of thought, of experience, comes in. Because if you've got people who are really proud about where they've come from and are able to bring themselves to work and not be scared about having to check, you know, to fight misogyny in the workplace, or who aren't afraid to check their privilege at the door, then you get a group of people working together who come together, who are passionate about working together, who are passionate about delivering things. And then Barnardo's, and this is where I stopped talking, thank God, one of the things that I think I'm most proud about, the fact that we've managed to achieve over the last 3 years, is take the organization on a journey of recognizing why data is important to it, and then working out, very importantly, how it could use it for better. Not just looking at, oh, how can we get more money out of our donors? Or, oh, how can we check how many people are coming to our website? But thinking about, how do we use data to radically transform social care for children in the UK? What do we need to know to make them have better lives and to put vulnerable children on a level playing field with their peers? So I'm going to completely stop talking at this stage and say thank you very, very much indeed for coming to listen to our little talk about why data is incredible. Lyra.
Hello. As Jason mentioned, we do need data. We need to be able to recognise and treat data as an asset, because it's an unbelievable thing. But the why, and knowing, you know, we know data is the new oil, we know what that means, but what does data mean to an organisation really does vary, and it all leads from the starts from the corporate strategy. That drives what we need to do with data, that's your why. For Barnardo's, that's better outcomes for more children, and we're looking to build stronger families, safer childhoods and positive futures. So from that is how we get what we want to do with our data. So this is our team's vision, mission and implementation, the what and the why and the how. The what being at the top, what we're trying to do, and then the why at the middle, and looking at how we demonstrate our impact, obviously making that impact, raising more money, influencing public opinion, government and policy. And that's our why, and that always links back to what the organisation is trying to do. And then the kind of how at the bottom and putting the user at the heart of what we do. Jason talked about user needs, but obviously our users are so important. Our employees, our volunteers, and obviously our children and young people, that, you know, that's why we're here. Our commissioners, external bodies, everyone we're trying to work with, we just need to make sure, as we said, we're working together to get better outcomes for more children. So this is essentially looking at how we do that operationally, what we're aiming for in practice. So looking at accessibility, making sure what data we have, how can we access the right data? How do we make it available, again, to the right people, but in exploring what we can do with that? Accuracy, really important that people trust the data. How do we make sure that we can do that? Architecture, building the right architecture and infrastructure so that we can do all of these things and have the foundations in place so that we can improve our analysis. You know, using different analytics and storytelling to really discover and demonstrate our impact, but really then acting on it, not just having these this insight for just the fun of it. We know that we want to get to that data-driven culture. We want it to be underpinned by good governance, and we want it also to be built on ethics. So this is my really technical diagram, so just bear with me, it's one of two. One way we're trying to do this is that we're changing our main existing recording system. So that's a system that we use to record our interactions and transactions with our children and young people and the intervention and outcomes. So on the left is how we have our services at the moment within a document management system with each service having its own area. There is some structured data behind it, some core data that everyone captures, but there is a lot of local data forms and local data practices and so many spreadsheets. I probably don't even know what exists out there, but lots of different ways of doing things. What we're trying to get to on the right is having a new case management system, which is essentially the child at the centre, making sure all the interventions, all the relationships, everything that we do is linked to that one person, and having a very structured pathway along the way from referral and all the assessments and the plans up to that closure stage. Some of the benefits. So, as you said, one of the main things is having that one record for the child, and using that to inform our practice. We don't just want it to be about collecting information. We want to enable people and practitioners, especially, to do their job, to make it easier for them to do the things that they do better. And safeguarding around this is a massive driver for us. And we want to be able to work better, to use, you know, see, making sure that people can see their caseloads, understand who they're working with, and making it easier for them to do their job. But then so that we can use that information to show impact. How do we make sure that at a service level, at a regional level, at a national level, that we can really understand what's happening, what works, what doesn't, and using that to share knowledge within the organisation, but also externally. We want to be able to look at the trends and see things around emerging vulnerabilities. At the moment, it's really hard for us to be able to do that with the information in different places, but this is a starting point to get to see it all together. We want to be able to put the foundations in place to be able to share information with our commissioners and the NHS or multi-agency groups. There's lots of this stuff happening already, but a lot of it's manual, a lot of it takes time. How do we make that better? And the last one at the end is really important around giving the child a stronger voice. How do we look to give them access to the data and understand how they feel about data and what we're collecting and how we're collecting it? It's been really interesting, some of the terminology that's used and how, you know, what questions we're asking and how do we, co-produce or, you know, whatever the word is, but how do we speak to them and really understand what we're doing to help them feel as part of what we're doing? So more boxes. This is how we just broke it up. This is just essentially the operational side of it. We broke it down into different work streams. Each work stream has its own individual objectives and outcomes. We're starting small, so we've got a pilot and thinking about how that works up into rollout, iterating processes and ways of working, seeing what works, what doesn't. We have a hybrid of different ways of doing things, project management styles, Agile, Trello, workplace, anything that you think of, we've probably got some version of it, which is always quite fun. But essentially, we're looking to see what works for the audience and the activity and working together. And starting small really helps with that, to not get too overwhelmed with trying to implement this in roughly 1,000 services. So some of the learnings, which probably won't come as a surprise, and also I've probably missed a few. Obviously key business ownership and leadership, really helping to make decisions and drive this forward. We have a steering group, which is our children's services management team, which we meet regularly with and really helps to give direction. And also we need their help to put this into play. We can't just be, it can't be digital leading. It's got to be them helping us and doing it together. Three tips we've learned from our steering group is to send relevant stuff as part of the papers, and do send something if we can. Go in person if possible. And the third thing we learned was don't be late. That's just an insightful tip that we learned from working with our key stakeholders. We know we want to start small and manage those expectations. We know things aren't going to be perfect at the start, but we do need some minimum like expectations, and what we definitely want to have as a minimum. We want to show where we're going and make sure that we reassure them that we have a plan and outcomes, but we understand that it's going to be iterative, but those benefits will always be there. A lot of our misunderstandings have come from people expecting too much too soon, not unnecessarily understanding all the complexity around what we're trying to do, and they feel that they don't know what's happening, they don't have control, and thinking about change with all these people, and they're worried about, you know, what that's going to be. So it's really that talking to each other, understanding their concerns. We've done quite a few one-to-ones just to really drive into it, and just thinking about interdependencies and key decision points, and making sure all of that information is visible, accessible, and consistent. It's been quite interesting doing a bit of a balance between making everything perfect and therefore not ever doing anything, to going away from, you know, having your head in the sand and saying it's all going to be fine and not having anything in place. We're finding that balance with a few things and just trying to make, you know, pragmatic, informed decisions. Change is really hard, and it's quite overwhelming at some times. So it just, there's been a lot of talking and decision making based on hopefully some data. Success criteria is really important. It is about the system, but it's also about recording. And where it's been great is having people from the rest of the organisation come and help us. We've had two children's services subject matter experts who've come and helped us understand where they're, you know, representing children's services, which is where what we're trying to improve. But they can go and talk to the people that we want to work with and say, this is what it's going to mean for you, in terms that I could never talk to them about because I don't know and haven't had that experience or working with the children and young people in the way that they do. But what we're also trying to do is build champions and super users. So working within the digital and technology team, one of the things that the capability team are doing are thinking about those digital champions and building digital capability out in the organisation. And this is one of the projects that we've basically hijacked them for, which is great. And the final thing is just thinking about data, obviously, from the start. There's no point having something shiny and unless you can get something out of it that's going to be useful. Obviously, data protection and privacy by design, if you're thinking about it from the beginning, it's really important, because then it makes so much difference at the end. But building something that's flexible and can manage change is really important. And then just from what we're trying to do as well, I just thought I'd add that, you know, one of the things we've learned, or I've learned, is around being like strong, informed, open and kind to each other. I think it is absolutely all about communication when doing anything like this. But, you know, recognising different strengths and different ways of working, and talking things through and getting to a point of, you know, we are all trying to do the same thing, but especially it can get slightly tense at times. But I think, you know, that's where talking becomes so important. This is my second technical diagram. So what we're doing is that is just a stepping stone to our kind of overall picture. And obviously we have our users, our business users, our commissioners, and our children and young people, and probably lots of others. They're giving us data. So we need to understand what we're collecting and why we're using it, as Jason mentioned earlier. The purple database is the example of what I've just been talking about, our one system over there. But we do have so many other systems other case management systems, finance, HR, contract management, retail, all of that. And we know that we're never going to change that. So we've got all these different systems. And what we're trying to think about is how we try and consolidate that into something. We don't know what that something is yet. We are working on the requirements to think about the technology as opposed to kind of going, right, we just need a data lake, let's just do that. But it's, we know so many people are on this journey and so many people are far and so many people are starting. And that's why it's been really good to talk to people at these kind of events, but also to talk to other charities who are maybe in the same sector or not in the same space or not even in that, but trying to understand what people are doing. Again, just learning from what we're doing and working as a sector together. We're going to start small, so we're going to aim to do, you know, even if we just got one number in our consolidated data store, then that's a starting point. But we're thinking about those work streams that I mentioned earlier, but also, you know, the governance, the management, the standards around our data, terminology, consistency, quality. But then thinking about the culture as well, you know, Barnardo's is 150 plus years old. It's a lot of legacy in there, a lot of organisational history, which is amazing. But also, you know, change is moving a very big ship. So what we are looking to do is use those digital champions, really explaining people why it's important, what's in it for them, what they're going to get from it, but also what they're going to lose from it. And so they can really understand the whole picture. And finally, around ethics, looking to create a framework on that. There's a lot of stuff that happens in research, so there's a lot of things obviously that happen in children's services, a lot of things that happen in the organisation, but around data, really want to champion that and make it give the framework to build on. Obviously all of that leads to insight and action, moving from our descriptive analytics to predictive analytics and all of in between, what we've done, what could happen, and giving that information back to our users. That's where we're but I just wanted to touch on ethics as well, because for me, it's really important, but it is becoming more important and becoming, and lots of people are talking about this and bringing it to the table. You know, it's so easy to get caught up in all this automated technology and all the opportunities are amazing, but we do need to think about the ethics and, you know, the whole, if you could, you shouldn't, or no, just because you could doesn't mean you should, all of that thing. So making sure that we always think about this, and these are some of the factors within that. So for ethics, for me, you know, it's a responsible, sustainable use of data, making sure we're doing the right thing for people and society, and making sure that everything is sustainable, benefiting humans first and foremost, but also considering these impact on all groups, building on being truthful, fair, honest, and respecting all individuals. So starting with people at the centre, you know, we know humans are unique. We know we have empathy, we have self-determination, unpredictability, intuition, and we need to make sure that they're always at the centre of what we're doing. We need to make sure it benefits people, and we need to listen to all our audiences. We need to make sure people have control. We know that there's a GDPR talk over there, so absolutely incredibly important. But we need to make sure people are empowered with their data. We also want to, you know, we need to be open. We need to be encompassing an open culture. We need people to understand their activities and what automated decisions, what it means for them, especially vulnerable people. And we can't just have it as a tick box. People need to be accountable. We need, and organizations need to be accountable. We need to understand the risks, the social, ethical, and societal consequences, and making sure that we work to reduce those risks or eliminate them. And finally, around equality, which actually more equity, ensuring that people have the same opportunities and that the impact doesn't affect people negatively. You know, with bias and all algorithms and using diverse data, how do we make sure that whatever we're doing, we're thinking about what could happen? We know there's lots of things happening in the AI space, especially with charities. We know that actually DataKind are giving a talk, I don't know where, but around that as well. So I won't kind of talk too much about this, but we know we tried to do something around a proof of concept around recruitment for foster carers. It was good and it worked, and we were trying to see, you know, the journey and see what models we can put in place. But again, it just highlighted that our data needs to be in a really good place before we do any of that stuff. You know, the risk around it and the quality and the accuracy and what we've got isn't enough to be doing that right now, but it's something that we want to do in the future. And I think I have Giselle from DataKind's card, so I'm definitely going to hook her up. Know that the Cystic Fibrosis Trust, they use AI, I think with Alan Turing, to spot patterns and behaviours, symptoms and treatments and using and effects. They've just been given a £2.5 million grant to test AI to see how people can monitor themselves at home. So that's really, you know, there's some really exciting things happening. I think there was a Arthritics Research doing a chatbot using natural conversation, you know, using chatbots on their website to make sure people have, it seems like it's a natural conversation. And the Children's Society using a translation tool with machine learning, looking to address some of the problems of the lack of trust, especially when working with child migrants and refugees. But, and there's just a few, so there's, I'm sure there's so much more going on. But we just need to think about the risks. You know, great power comes great responsibility. We need to think about those negative impacts and what could happen. We know that there's vast quantities of data out there, and some people have been using data to predict child abuse and intervene before that happens. And which is, you know, all of this stuff, people are working to really address societal need, but it does link into then intruding in individual privacy, but also the risk of accidentally incorporating and perpetuating discrimination against minorities. We know that with data algorithms and data models, we know that systems are going to inevitably incorporate the biases of people who are making them, who people who are designing them. And it does lead us to, you know, perpetuating stereotypes and discrimination. And especially, you know, we're operating without public scrutiny in some cases. So we just need to make sure it's not stopping people doing it, but it's like GDPR in a way. It's not stopping people doing it. It's just making sure that we do it in the right way. We know that the data used for models can lead to prejudice, because that's the data that humans, as us, that we've created historically. In America, for example, they again tried to create a prediction model using proxy variables around child abuse, and this included calls from the community and from child placements. And they found that the members of the community make calls 3.5 times more about black families than white families. And a lot of this and a lot of the variables they had were linked, were direct measures of poverty. So, you know, racial profiling, poverty profiling, it targets individuals for extra and puts extra scrutiny on them, not because of their behaviour, but because of a personal characteristic. And we just, I think, really need to think about that. You know, the AI, the chatbots, we've seen them become abusive because, see, people are people and feed it information. So, you know, we've got to think about that. And facial recognition, people not recognising people and seeing them differently. You know, the police are starting to use live facial recognition. There's lots in the paper about that. There's lots of questions about that. So how do we think about what we're going to do with it? We need to think about how it's going to make people feel and what are the impact, what's the consequences for all groups. As Jason said earlier, you know, there's different groups who are probably historically in different roles or different teams, but, you know, as a charity sector, we are diverse, and we are, you know, we need to incorporate that and think about all of these people. But there is a lot of things happening. I haven't put it on here, but the ODI have a data ethics framework, and there's lots of things that they do that they're starting to work on. There's a Centre of Ethics and Innovation. That's probably the wrong thing, but that's been created last year to, you know, look at how they can connect policymakers and different and experts to see and produce papers to then hopefully produce policy and act on it to make sure that these things are taken into account. And so the charity role within that, you know, ethics is around going above and beyond regulatory requirements by taking the spirit of the guidance and doing the right thing. It's, you know, that's the ethos of charities. We know that we are learning from the past. We know that there's around data protection, we've made mistakes, but we've cleaned up our act, and we've actually done a lot as a sector to do that. What can other industries learn from us? We know there's lots of new technologies and they're forcing us to think about it. It's moving at a ridiculous rate. And so we, you know, how can we build on these collaborations with the big tech companies and making sure we hold them to account, but also that they listen to us when we're doing these types of things. We can bring, I think, diversity in creating those algorithms, making sure that data is diverse, and most importantly, working with vulnerable groups or different groups. There's a plethora of charities who work with so many different people. You know, we really should be working with them and making sure that they are having their voice and talking about all of these things and what it can, you know, the impact and the consequences. So we can champion those behaviours and make sure that the data is representative. You know, we have to use these opportunities. It's kind of horse, bolt, car, whatever. It's happening, and it's happening quickly. And we should make use of it and use the opportunities, but we really just need to make sure that, again, there's negative impacts and the ethics and is considered of all different groups. I think we should be using the data. We need to make sure we use it right. And I think as a charity sector, we really have the opportunity to work together to make it happen. Play a part in doing the right thing. And that's me. I'm going to stop talking now. That's it.
Oh. Go away.
I'm just moving on.
So, yeah, really fascinating session. So thank you for that. I've already got one question on the app, so I'm going to go straight to that. This is from Jacob. How did you go about training people? What skills did you focus on and what barriers did you face?
So we did I'm just going to write that down so I remember. I'm very digital. I have a notebook. Training.
How did you go about training people?
Yeah.
Skills did you focus on? What barriers?
Okay. So we have we had our own training kind of work stream where we had one of our children's services subject matter experts do a bit of a training needs analysis. So again, we had some ideas of what skills they needed, but it was actually talking to the people who were going to be using the system to really understand what they needed and kind of, you know, test our hypothesis against that. So it's probably a woolly answer of going, I don't know, but talk to the people who you need to train. A lot of the barriers it's a culture thing. It's, you know, the system can, people, you know, change systems all the time, you know, have upgrades on your phone, whatever, you get used to things, but it's the culture change about recording and how we go from, you know, working in different silos within different services to really build and understand what it is we're trying to do together so that, you know, their change of practice might change, but really explain to them why. And some of the barriers around getting time, making sure that people think that this is important. And that's where the directorship really comes into play, because you need people to say, it's okay, I'm giving you time to learn this new system. And also it's, you know, making sure we have materials and easy places to go to and easy processes in place. I hope that answers your question, Stan.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing. It's really inspiring what you guys are doing. I'm quite jealous at your data team in your digital team. We've always been really siloed traditionally at my organisation, and we're kind of on a journey of working together more. So my question is, I wondered how, when you are in the same team, how are you feeding your insights into the rest of the digital team? What does that look like for your production, like people who are doing production, people who are working on both your internal culture change, but also the websites that you mentioned?
I can go in if you want to add anything. So I'd love to say that it's all perfect and everyone's working together in a beautiful way. We're in a data team within digital technology, but there are lots of other people doing data all over the place. We have a strategic impact team who are amazing research and impact reporting, and then actually individually people are doing their own amazing things. So we're at that starting point of understanding, you know, who's doing what. And I think that's where we're getting to then make sure, you know, we understand who's doing everything, what is needed, and then who can do it. Within the digital and technology team, even within that, it's so easy to just get on your own little work stream. But I think it's communication, and it's just talking to people, understanding what they're doing and understanding what you're doing, and just making, you know, talking it through. It's hard because we're all in different places. We're not located in the same office. which also is quite a challenge, even just with my team, I find. So all of this stuff is hard. But then, you know, there are all the tools that we have that you can use. And I think it's just thinking about what works and trying something out and then giving it a go.
We've got another question on the app. So this is from Fiona. How did you select your digital champions?
So we put a message out and asked people if they wanted to be involved. So it was through our internal comms team was one of the starting points. A lot of it's come, again, from, you know, you'll have a meeting about something and you'll mention it and then someone will go, oh, well, I didn't know you were doing that. And, oh, okay, well, okay, yes, but we tried to tell you, but obviously 8,000 people and 23,000 volunteers actually being able to, you know, see the one email that went out is difficult. So, but it was also identifying people within, so for us, that one of the pilots that we're doing, it was talking to them and identifying people who actually, within each kind of place, there's normally a few people who write, okay, I get these things. I'm the one who does the Excel spreadsheet, and this is my beautiful Excel spreadsheet over here. And they are normally beautiful, and we're like, oh, you can't use that anymore. But it's, yeah, it's again, it's just probably asking and seeing who's there, but also shout out and lots of different ways of, you know, you've just got to see who wants to, but also very much set the expectations of this is what we're going to expect from you, this is how much time you might need, and make sure you get the buy-in and make sure you understand what's happening. And then if you don't do that, then we have to take that decision and go, someone else might be able to do that. So yeah, I think that's my answer. I don't know if you want to add to that, maybe.
I think one thing that's coming through from everything you're talking about, which I think having talked to a lot of other charities in the last few months is another big thing, is the value of building a community. Mm. Like all of us in digital teams to a certain extent think we're the only ones doing this and it's really quite a lonely job. But I don't know whether it's just a special Bernardo's thing or whether I think it's quite regular across all of our things. There are people who want to be on that journey with you, with us. There are people who have latent skills and interest in this stuff, and getting away from the pain and stress of a lot of the day jobs that, yeah, a lot of absolutely. Our frontline staff have, for instance, this is quite a fun thing to get into. We got told by our CEO, you can't have a champions network. There are so many champions, there's champions for this, champions. We didn't need to really ask hugely. Yeah. Like, you put out a thing saying, who's interested in finding out more about the children that you were with, or who's interested in trying out some new tech? We've all tried this, right? This is familiar stuff. People come to the door. We should be proud of that.
Yeah,
it's about welcoming people in and making it safe and fun and enjoyable and something that doesn't put an extra burden on people. And you do that amazingly in your team.
But I think, yeah, I think what you touched on was, you know, it's language. It's how do you, you know, it's not like, do you want to join our data community? It's like, do you want to, you know, do what you said. And I think there's also the element of, it's so easy to get caught up in the operational, the BAU, the kind of, actually, let's just use some time to just have some fun. Like, you know, or let's just use that time to go, okay, so who's got ideas about what we could do? Let's, you know, I know, I think it was Barclays and Payal Jane, who's, you know, she used to have time out of her, like Friday afternoon, where they all just, you know, came up with something that was totally obviously related to the work, but wasn't, it wasn't necessarily set as their BAU piece of, you know, what they had to do. And so it's just balancing that whole side of things to make sure that make people excited. But yeah, and using people will come.
This is a question about if you come across data about other organisations, say smaller charities who do good stuff around helping young people, and they don't know about it, would you tell them? Do you share the goodies? You know, a lot of other organizations, not you, I'm saying, but other organizations might just say, oh, well, we can do that then. And then they come in and take over and they kind of kill off the other small charity.
That's a risk, isn't it?
What do you do about data? Because you said it's not just about the organization and what happens in the organization.
So Jason is a fabulous networker and will come back and go, I talked to this person and they are doing this thing and it's fabulous and we should talk to them and it's brilliant. And then the next day he'll probably meet someone else. And so there are lots of people, which is brilliant because that's how you build that community externally. I think, you know, as Jason pointed out, the blogs and the information that we put is all out there. And we're not trying, you know, we want to work with people. We want to make sure that we can, with external organisations, we're all trying to do the same thing. How do we actually just get better at some of this stuff together? But it's, again, it's so easy to get caught up in what you're doing and then not see it. And that's why things like this are so important, or people getting in touch with someone. And, you know, I probably am sometimes guilty of it, just not like dropping someone a note and going, you know, do you want to talk about this? And if they don't, they don't. And if they do, great. And it's definitely something I think we should do more of. And I think it's not necessarily happening as much, but these things, and you know, people just reaching out, and I'd love to have more conversations with people. I think it's fantastic, and it's just making, you know, it's really important, and making that time, and just remembering that when everything else is going on over here. But you know, there's getting to that point where we, you know, want the foundations in place so that we can really make sure that we can use this and better. But I'd love to build that community, have a chat, get in touch.
Right, this is going to have to be the last question because we're up against it on time now. This is from Katrina. In the context of data collection related to your individual service users, which she presumes are specifically in the social care sector, what software do you use to collect, evaluate, and share your service user data?
So I think that's what we're trying to get to, in a way, is that we have our different case management systems. We have one for mental health, we have one for our family placement system, we have one now which is more for lots of varied services, and a lot of it's collecting data, and then a lot of it is, okay, well, we need to give our commissioner something every X, Y, and Z, so each service works in its own way. And so where we're trying to get to is, how can we, you know, at the moment we are trying to, you know, trials and things around analytical tools, whatever, to be able to, for people to give that information, to share it anonymized, or, and then when it's not anonymized, we, you know, the whole data sharing side of things is another massive thing that we're thinking about. So probably a variety of things, and I think again it goes back to the fact that what are your requirements, and what's the technology that's going to fit that, not just choosing the technology, because there are so many things out there that can all do the same thing, but it's what is going to be good for your organization.
Brilliant. We're going to have to wrap at that point. Better if I face this thing, isn't it? So I think really fascinating session. Some good questions and answers as well. Really want to thank Mira and Jason for giving their time for the fascinating session. Let's show our thanks again.